बिहारे जया कुंज बिहारे राधा माधवा जया कुंज बिहारे जया कुंज बिहारे गोपी जन्ना भलाभा जया गिरिभरा धारे जया गिरिभरा धारे गोपी जन्ना भलाभा जया गिरिभरा धारे जया गिरिभरा धारे यशोदा नंदना जया ब्रज जन रंजना जया ब्रज जन रंजना यशोदा नंदना जया ब्रज जन रंजना जया ब्रज जन जमुना तीर बना छे जया कुंज बिहारे जया जया जमुना तीर बना छे जया कुंज बिहारे राधा माधव जया कुंज बिहारे जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य आशुतोषतर श्रीमाधे जिवाइंग ग्रेस एसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी शिल प्रभुपाद की जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य आशुतोषतर श्रीमाद इज दिवाइन ग्रेस भक्ति सिद्धांत सरस्वती गोस्वामी महाराज शिल प्रभुपाद की अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की इस कुंफोंदर आचार्य शिल प्रभुपाद की ग्रंथराशिमं भागवतं की दाई गौर प्रेमनंदे ओ ग्लोरिस टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज ओ ग्लोरिस टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज ओ ग्लोरी सु द असेंबल डिवोटीज ओ ग्लोरी सु शिशि गुरु एंड शि गौरंगा
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय This morning we continuing with the churning of the milk ocean, Canto 8, Chapter 8, and the text on the board is text 14, but I'll read text 12 and text 13 as well. Those two texts don't have a purport, and then when we get to text 14 we can chant responsibly. So text 12. Rishayal Kalpayam Chak Grur Abhikshekam Yata Vidi Jagar Badrani Gandharva Natyascha Nantur Jagaha. And the translation for text 12. The great sages performed the bathing ceremony of the goddess of fortune So directed in the authorized scripture, the Gandharvas chanted all auspicious Vedic mantras, and the professional woman dancers very nicely danced and sang authorized songs prescribed in the Vedas. And then text 13, Mega Madanga Panava, Murai Janaka, Gornukan, Vyanadayan, Shankavenu, Vinas Tumula Nishvanam. And the translation for text 13. The clouds in personified form beat various types of drums known as madangas, panavas, murajas, and anakas. They also blew conch shells and bugles known as gomukhas and played flutes and stringed instruments. The combined sounds of these instruments was tumultuous. And then text 14, which is the one we can chant responsibly. Tato bishishu devim. Shriyam Padma Karam Nat Satim. Digipa Purna Kalasai. Shukta Vakyar Dvijeritai. Tato Bishishchur Devim Shriyam Padma Karam Satim Digiba Purna Kalasai Shukta Vakya Dvijeritai Tato Bishishchur Devim Shriyam Padma Karam Satim Digiba Purna Kalasai Shukta Vakya Dvijeritai. Please chant. Tato Bishis Chudevim Shriyam Padma Karam Satim Digibai Purna Kalasai Shukta Vakya Dvijeritai. Tato Bishishchu Devim Shriyam Padma Karam Satim Digipa Puna Kalasai Shukta Vakya Dvijeritai. Tato Bishishchu Devim Shriyam Padma Karam Satim Dijipa Puna Kalasai Shukta Vakta Dvijeritai. Okay, the word for word translation. Tata, thereafter, Abhishishichu poured all auspicious water on the body. Devim, the goddess of fortune. Shriyam, very beautiful. Padmakaram, with the lotus in her hand. Satim, she who is most chaste, not knowing anyone but the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Digiba, the great elephants, Purna Kalasai, by completely full water jugs. Shukta Vakyai, with Vedic mantras. Dvija, by brahmanas. Ritai, chanted. Translation. Thereafter, the great elephants from all the directions carried big water jugs full of Ganges water and bade the goddess of fortune to the accompaniment of Vedic mantras chanted by learned brahmanas. While thus being bathed, the goddess of fortune maintained her original style with a lotus flower in her hand, and she appeared very beautiful. The goddess of fortune is the most chaste, for she does not know anyone but the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Om Agyana Timurandasya Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Namom Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimataram Padaswami Dinamine. Namom Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Dinamine. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Paschacha Deshatarine. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. So, there was a purport, that's right, thank you. Okay, so the purport. The goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, is described in this verse as Sriyam, which means that she has six opulences: wealth, strength, influence, beauty, knowledge, and renunciation. These opulences are received from the goddess of fortune. Lakshmi is addressed here as Devi, the goddess, because in Vaikuntha, she supplies all opulences to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his devotees, who in this way enjoy natural life in the Vaikuntha planets. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is pleased with his consort, the goddess of fortune, who carries a lotus flower in her hand. Mother Lakshmi is described in this verse as Sati, the supremely chaste, because she never diverts her attention from the Supreme Personality of Godhead to anyone else. So, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada is making a connection, and the connection he's making is between the word Sriyam, which is translated as very beautiful. And the connection he's making is that to also that the goddess of fortune is possessing not only beauty, but also wealth, strength, influence, knowledge, and renunciation. So Srila Prabhupada has expanded the original beauty that was attributed to the goddess of fortune. And not only does she possess an abundance of these attributes, but she is in fact supplying these same attributes in abundance to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and to his devotees. So this is her particular beauty. Not only does she possess these extraordinary attributes, but she also supplies them to the devotees and to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or Lord Narayan, her consort. So I thought to look at two of these attributes, and beginning with the first one, if one considers the attribute of beauty, there's a particular definition one would have of beauty, and that is that it's something that comes from within the heart, from the soul. So contrary perhaps to the regular definition of beauty, which has more to do with external application or external adornment. And in fact, the criterion that needs to be met for the first definition of beauty, the one that's the beauty coming from the heart, from the soul, is that there has to be purity. So purity is that which comes from spiritual endeavors. For example, meditating on the Supreme Soul, and in the case of Lakshmi Devi, her meditation on Lord Narayan. Performing austerity, so one doesn't think of beauty being related to the purity of performing austerities, but indeed that's the case. And also the engagement in Vedic studies is allowing for purity to be present, which is enhancing beauty. And following regulative principles, again, it's permitting purity to be there, and hence beauty to be manifest. So a very interesting connection. and in particular, what's necessary is that all of these, studying the Vedic scriptures, meditating on the Supreme Soul, performing austerities, and following regulative principles, they have to, the result of these endeavors has to be that they're culminating in loving service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's the essential component. Otherwise, the beauty aspect is not there and the purity is not there. It has to be in connection to Lord Narayan or Lord Krishna. And since Lord Shiva has come up very recently in this whole pastime, he has a particular description that he gives connected to this whole concept of purity and its connection with beauty. And he particularly looks at pure devotees, and he says that purity is coming from the fact that within themselves they are sustaining the three Vedas. So, interestingly enough, in Lord Shiva's comparison, he makes, in Lord Shiva's description of that purity being present in devotees, he says that those Vedas are none different indeed from Lord Brahma, Lord Vishnu, and himself. So one takes it by implication, not that Lord Shiva is saying this, but certainly there's great purity and beauty both in Lord Vishnu, Lord Brahma, and Lord Shiva, and hence the purity and the beauty are present in those personalities. Now, since the source of beauty is purity from spiritual endeavors that result in service being lovingly performed to Lord Krishna, then one can actually by logic say that the actual source of beauty is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Narayan or Lord Krishna. because the service is being performed, all these austerities that allow for purity are being performed to him. And if done lovingly, then the actual source of beauty and purity is Lord Krishna and Lord Narayan. So... And this is borne out because There's this wonderful generalization. It's given in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the first canto, the 7th chapter, or the 7th verse. This is the particular generalization that's made in relation to the statement I've just made in terms of logic. So I'm quoting, "All beautiful things emanate from him, and his personal form is so attractive that it steals the eyes away from all other objects, which then seem devoid of beauty in comparison to him." when Lord Krishna, to expand this a little bit, this great beauty of Lord Krishna, when Lord Krishna was on the earth, he attracted the eyes of all people. When Krishna spoke, his words attracted the minds of all who remembered him. By seeing the footsteps of Lord Krishna, people became attracted to him, and thus they wanted to offer their bodily activities to the Lord and his devotees. So, you know, one often has this experience just in relation to this particular expansion on the idea of the beauty of Lord Krishna, that even seeing the imprint of his footsteps arouses that desire to offer some sort of service to him in a loving mood. Some time back, you know, as a young devotee, I was visiting in New Delhi, and two very nice devotees who were running a very small preaching center. Literally, I don't know, the room was like a teeny little box, but somehow they packed in, I don't know, maybe 15, 18 students morning and evening. And the first time I got exposed to the, it was a husband and wife team, to the wife, I noticed that her method of greeting was to immediately look at you know, the lower portion of my body, and I was a little shy. And after many years, I realized that, you know, just glancing at the lotus feet of a devotee arouses that same sentiment of wanting to perform some service to a devotee. So I was appreciating, it took me time to appreciate what must have been the position of that devotee, that that was her method of greeting, immediately glancing down. Of course, I was such a young devotee, it was not necessary for her to do that, but something on a personal level, experience-wise, of the loving service or mood of loving service being aroused just by being aware of some aspect of the anatomy of a devotee, and particularly the lotus feet. So now, looking at pure devotees, because Lord Shiva had mentioned that what they're carrying within their hearts is actually the Vedas. So what they're actually carrying within their hearts, or how they're sustaining the Vedas, means that they're actually carrying within their hearts the glories of Krishna, which are sung in the sublime verses of the Vedas. So this is what's being carried. It's extremely subtle, because that's what the Vedas are doing. They're glorifying Lord Narayan and Lord Krishna, and the very purified devotees, they're actually carrying those glories of Krishna through the verses. So one can feel very encouraged to learn verses just from that point of view, because one's actually carrying something of the glories of Lord Krishna within the heart. So going back to the beauty of Lord Krishna or Govinda, it said that even the supreme opulence of the Lord of Vaikuntha, Lord Narayan, who's under discussion here in this verse, it becomes pale in the light of the beauty of Lord Krishna. So there's that comparison that's been made. I have a small deity at home who's called Govinda Hari. And this is a description of Krishna and his form as Govinda, or not a description, but it's mentioned that he particularly has inconceivable spiritual strength to enchant and give pleasure. So I'm very encouraged because I do experience this from my small deity, because even though the deity is literally an inch by an inch, extremely small, there's great pleasure that I always experience just by glancing at his beautiful face. So, and this beauty of Lord Krishna, Govinda, his giving pleasure and his giving spiritual strength, it's actually by the kindness of the spiritual master, because after all, it's the spiritual master who's carrying the glories of Lord Krishna within the heart. So by his kindness towards one, the mercy he's bestowing on one, one is then receiving that extraordinary spiritual strength just by glancing at the deity, or of course worshipping him even more so. And it's supposed to be that over time, the devotee is getting that opportunity to also develop a direct blissful relationship with the Lord. And this usually comes, now I don't have, you know, perfect experience of this, I'm saying something that's coming from the scriptures. This is coming after one has understood the blissful pastimes of Lakshmi Narayan. So that's supposed to be the first step. One is understanding those pastimes. Then one is understanding the pastimes of Sita Ram, Rukmini Dwarkadesh, and finally Lord Krishna. So there's a sequence for developing that blissful relationship on a personal level with Lord Krishna. And this is again mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the 11th canto, and this was the second chapter, the 38th verse, where there's mention of this development of the relationship. So in this context here, where the discussion is of Lakshmi Devi and her relationship with Lord Narayan, actually, Lord Narayan is served with great awe and reverence. And it's not just Lakshmi Devi. It's actually hundreds and thousands of goddesses of fortune who are serving him. So hundreds and thousands of goddesses of fortune are then supplying those attributes of beauty or wealth or renunciation to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And one doesn't usually think of it that way, but that's what's stated here. And the same hundreds and thousands of goddesses of fortune are supplying those attributes of beauty, wealth, strength, renunciation to the devotees. So quite extraordinary. They're possessing that, but they're also giving those same attributes. And one's fortunate, there's hundreds and thousands of the goddesses of fortune doing the same thing. So in this purport, there's Srila Prabhupada references that in the Vaikuntha planets, there's natural life that's lived by the devotees. due to these opulences that are being bestowed by Lakshmi. So one wonders, what is the connection between natural and these extraordinary opulences? Because it's not so natural in our world to possess those opulences. In fact, there's a paucity of them, or at least several of them, there's a paucity. One may be a little bit there. So, of course, that's, again, looking on the external level. So just recalling that these the abundance of these attributes is from the heart and the soul. Life is natural in the Vaikuntha planets because there's actual spiritual bliss. And this is due to the devotees having that blissful relationship with the Lord. There cannot be spiritual bliss or without the relationship with the Supreme Lord. So just recalling that all those austerities, etc., it's always done in relationship with the Supreme Lord. So it's said that in the Vaikuntha planets, even the scenery, so, you know, we'll have some scenery behind the deities. In the Vaikuntha planets, the scenery, and today there are birds, so the birds and animals are fully conscious of Krishna. And they're absorbed in transcendental bliss as well. So now Krishna explains something of his abode very simply in Bhagavad Gita, because one's getting some idea of this place where everybody's endowed with an abundance of these extraordinary attributes, and there's a whole atmosphere of spiritual bliss. So this is Lord Krishna's description in Bhagavad Gita. He says, Na tat basayate suryo, na shashanko na pavakaha, yat gaiva na nivartante, tad dharma paramam mama. That supreme abode of mine is not illumined by the sun or moon, nor by fire or electricity. Those who reach it never return to the material world. That's from Bhagavad Gita 15:6. So the natural life referred to by Srila Prabhupada is one of full satisfaction on the spiritual planet of Krishna or Lord Narayan. So there's complete satisfaction because there's no paucity. There's an abundance of those extraordinary attributes. So hence there's full satisfaction. And this satisfaction is also due to the absence of any attachment to something material. Because attachment to material, there's always that paucity of spiritual bliss because there's no relationship with Krishna. So the minute there's no relationship with Krishna, then, and due to the attachment of something material, there's dissatisfaction. It's just automatic. So so that satisfaction that's present in the abode of Lord Krishna or Lord Narayan is in persons who've become associates of the Supreme Lord, and they're enjoying eternal bliss. So there's no fear of that bliss ending. It's eternal. So, looking at a second attribute that Lakshmi Devi both possesses and gives in abundance is that of knowledge. So, one can say that knowledge is bestowed by the goddess of fortune to a particular group of persons, those who are purely in Krishna consciousness, and those persons who don't know anything other than Krishna. He's their only shelter. Now, it's interesting, you know, we've been attending Jaini Tagore Hari and I, these interfaith meetings, and Often there's it seeps into the dialogue that the persons have a view of themselves as have been persons who've been chosen in some way to interpret the scriptures. So this particular understanding is so contrary, because the categorization of persons that are particularly close to Krishna is just by virtue of the fact that they've taken full shelter of Krishna. So it's actually their own austerities, sacrifices in relationship to Lord Krishna that have put them in that position. So it's a much more humble definition of a special group of persons than what's often presented in these interfaith dialogue meetings. These pure devotees who've are purely in Krishna consciousness, they worship the Supreme Lord as one without a second. So just like there's mentioned here that Lakshmi Devi is chaste only to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it's the same thing with the extremely purified devotees who don't know any shelter other than Krishna. They only have chastity towards Krishna. And this mentioned also in Bhagavad Gita in the 9th chapter, the 15th verse. When one engages in sacrifice by the cultivation of knowledge, worships the Supreme Lord as one without a second. So these are that particular category of persons. So the knowledge that's been bestowed by the Goddess of Fortune upon these great personalities is due to the sacrifice that they've performed. And particularly this sacrifice is the continuous engagement in chanting the glories of Lord Krishna. So it's a very extraordinary position to continuously be able to do that. And this has been done mentally, it's been done verbally, and it's been done bodily. So we often, are kind of stationary in one building and we're performing our services, and then there's visiting great personalities, and we understand that in 3 days' time that they'll be in a completely different city doing exactly the same thing, you know, chanting the glories of Lord Krishna. So constant engagement. So the Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, always remembering Krishna and chanting his glories. And it's done in a very happy mood. This is the other factor in the whole thing. So there's a happy mood, and it's accompanied by determination that they're going to achieve the Supreme Lord in a transcendental relationship of a particular mood. There's usually 5 moods, but there's that determination and certainty that they're going to, just like is mentioned here, or the description of being in a place where there's that loving relationship with the Lord, one's an associate with the Lord, and it's an atmosphere of transcendental bliss. So these great devotees are quite convinced that is the particular place they'll be attaining. So there's a nice analogy made by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and he says that those who propagate Krishna consciousness actively as part of Lord are part of Lord Nityananda's market. So this is how he describes it. So different persons in a marketplace have different varieties of things that they bring, and there's many customers who come to the market, but in the market of the holy name, it's the preachers of Krishna consciousness that are the employees. This is how it's described by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And there's a very nice book that came my way recently from Gita Nagri, Sri Godruma Kalpatavi, where there's a commentary by Jayapataka Swami. And he makes a very nice remark. He says one should try to endow himself with mercy, tolerance, pridelessness, and respect for all other living entities. And this is a very interesting point, and I thought, and again, it's because of recent experience, I've really been thinking a lot about this, and I was appreciating that Jayapataka Swami is commenting that always there should be the readiness to give credit to others without desiring any praise. And this has importance of why one should be trying to get these qualities, you know, tolerance or pridelessness and respect for others. It's because one's taking the position in many ways, even in a small, humble way, of kind of being a spiritual doctor. And so if one is intolerant of the persons that are coming, then it's very hard to treat the persons. So the importance of trying to, I mean, as Jayapataka Swami Maharaj says, it's trying to endow oneself with these particular qualities. And Lakshmi Devi, she's bestowing knowledge in persons who are becoming convinced of Lord Krishna's opulence and mystic power. So, as Srila Prabhupada says, unless one is convinced of the different opulences of the Supreme Lord, he cannot engage in devotional service. and then when one knows these opulences, factually knows them through gradual cultivation, then there's no option but to surrender to him. And this knowing of the opulences of Lord Krishna is something even like reading this simple verse here of the bathing of Lakshmi Devi and the particular opulences that she's bestowing, knowing that those are the opulences of the Lord. And also there's I just extracted one statement from the Brahma Samhita on this point, and this is about Lord Krishna. Like a diamond, the central self-supporting figure of self-luminous Lord Krishna stands as the central source of all potencies. So I'll read it again because it's so relevant to this discussion. Like a diamond, the central self-supporting figure of self-luminous Lord Krishna stands as the central source of all potencies. And that's from Sri Brahma Samhita 5.3. So we get an idea, something of where Lakshmi Devi is situated in relation to Lord Krishna just by understanding that he's actually the source of all potencies, but she's taking on the role that appears she's actually bestowing the particular attributes of wealth, beauty, renunciation to Lord Krishna. So intertwined they are. So these are some thoughts. If anybody has some thought on this particular verse or the other two that didn't have any purport to them.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for your class. One point I noticed, it mentions that Lakshmi was very chaste to the to God. And it seems like it's very easy to do that when he's has unlimited money and unlimited wealth, unlimited beauty. And the direction I'm going with this is that as far as relationships associating with devotees or anyone is concerned, we kind of want our friends or our husbands or whatever to be like God and our wives to be like Lakshmi. And that's pretty much not possible because we can see in the material world, generally, it doesn't matter whether you're a woman or a man, you want undivided attention from someone. I don't want you to look at another woman. I don't want you to fantasize about another woman. And the thing I appreciate about Krishna is that he kind of simultaneously kept this promise and broke it when he was dancing with the gopis. He divided his attention and at the same time, he kept his attention towards everyone. So my question is essentially is that as far as all of our relationships concern, our friends, our husbands, our wives, basically, generally in the material world, we won't have confidence unless my husband, my wife, or some leader of some institution gives me confidence. I won't be enthusiastic unless my husband, my wife, or whoever, you know, says I'm valuable. So how can we give up this notion of, you know, expecting people to be like God or the goddess of fortune in our relationships, and then we become very morose when they don't meet our expectations? It seems like that's very detrimental to our Christian consciousness. So can you expand on that point of how even we shouldn't even depend on devotees most of the time for our worth, for our value, because everyone's under the most material nature. We all have our faults. So our worth should only essentially go to God. So can you expand on those points a little bit?
So the question was, how can one actually not look for one's self-worth in one's wife, husband, or even one's confidence in one's wife, husband, or even through devotees? Well, in this particular verse, the main point had to do with receiving particular attributes. So they've been bestowed upon one, and the attributes were, you know, wealth, beauty, renunciation, strength. So strength is perhaps the one that most closely ties in with the question you've brought up, because it's what you're referring to is mental strength and also a kind of reconfiguration of the ego, which is also, you know, on the mental plane. It's the concepts one holds of oneself. So if one finds oneself in a position that as one's practicing Krishna consciousness, one's aware that there's struggle with one's self-worth or one's confidence, then naturally it seems to make sense that one will look externally for that confidence or sense of worth, and certainly from somebody that one's very close to, one will look for some reinforcement for the actions one performs or the statements one makes or let's say those things one does verbally or the things one does physically or even one's decisions. And then one finds that like you've stated, that becomes questionable. Can you truly change your sense of self-worth or your sense of confidence by just reinforcement coming from the outside, even though there's a close heart connection, obviously, if it's a person that one is close to? So one, you've very intelligently thought, you have to question the validity of that approach. And indeed, it's true, because any paucity within oneself has to be addressed rather through turning one's attention to looking for the source of strength. So the source of strength is always Lord Krishna. In this case, it was Lord Narayan, Lakshmi Devi. So that's the source of strength. So if one's in a position where, one's stumbling in those areas, then one turns to the source of strength. And the key in dealing with those stumbling blocks is not to allow them to overwhelm one. Rather, one acknowledges them and then turns one's attention to performing one's devotional service very carefully, with full devotion, with full care. So that's how one is actually connecting to the source of strength. So it means that one is aware of the paucity, but one pushes it to the background and concentrates, puts all one's energy into performing service very nicely to the best of one's ability with great care, being extremely conscious the purpose for which, why one is performing that service. And at the same time, one can fervently pray to overcome those stumbling blocks, but at no time should one actually let the stumbling blocks override the devotional service, because then it means you're falling away from the source of strength. And if one continues in that kind of way, then the strength is given. So the strength will come that one actually can recognize over a period of time, actually I've been able somehow, by the kindness of Lord Krishna, to be maintaining this service. Somehow or other, it's actually been accepted. Even devotees may even acknowledge it, this service. And that starts to change something of that old ego, those old concepts one has of oneself. I don't do things so well, or I'm not consistent, or what I do may not be pleasing to someone. That strength then allows one to start changing those concepts. Even one doesn't have to practically do it. It just happens automatically. One starts to get a new picture of oneself. And that's why it's called the true ego, or the other one is referred to as the false ego. It starts to fall away. One gets a completely new picture of oneself. And indeed, that's part of progressive spiritual life, the falling away of all those old concepts, that paucity that's naturally there is no longer a reality. It's getting filled up through the connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who's full in all those opulences, particularly the strength in this case, which is the issue at hand. So that's a response to the question. Thank you.
I'm wondering if you can help me understand what the right conception of the word purity would be, because I tend to hear it a lot. You hear, you take prasadam and it purifies your mind. You read Srila Prabhupada's books, it purifies your intelligence. You stub your toe and someone says, you're getting purified. So Yeah. So, what is the right understanding of purity?
It's a fantastic question. That there's so much reference to one's consciousness getting purified, reading books is a purifying one, taking prasadam is purifying one. So, what's the correct definition or understanding of the word purity? Yes. Well, there's it's often considered to be a disease that one is suffering from. So there's a very serious disease that is one of wanting to get some results from an activity one performs. And the reason it's considered a disease is because it's ensnaring one. One's getting more bound up by the material energy the more one tries to get that result from some activity one performs. Because with wanting to get the result, inevitably bad qualities emerge because one gets a little competitive, one gets a little envious because one looks around, you know, one is determined to get that result, as somebody else may get this or somebody has it and I don't have it. So it gets a little problematic. So the disease has been fed. And indeed, there's a very dissatisfied feeling that's going on most of the time with feeding a disease. So then one comes to Krishna consciousness and one starts hearing about purification or purifying. So the other term for purifying would be treating a disease that's there. So one's applying a treatment. So the treatment is trying to break that connection that one has had apparently for numerous lifetimes of my activity, my thought is going to give me this result. You're trying to break that connection between your belief that you can actually attain something by your actions. So here you are taking, say, reading something from the scriptures, and if one were reading a regular book, one may think, oh, by reading this book, the result I'm going to get is knowledge. It's going to actually now make me, you know, a more prestigious person. I'll certainly be able to, you know, bump my competition out of the way because now I have, you know, an extra category of knowledge. So it inevitably goes like that. There has to be a consideration of defending what one has and also competing with others. So here, if you contrast that with reading something from the scriptures, the treatment for that chain of thought, one is getting knowledge, but interestingly enough, one's dependent on that knowledge being revealed to one through this kindness of the spiritual master. So one's not in control. I mean, one's not in control in the first scenario either, but one believes one is, and one's doing everything to make arrangements to allow for one to control what one wants to acquire. But here in the second case, one's dependent, completely dependent on the kindness of one's spiritual master somehow allowing one to understand some little aspect of what one is reading. And so that knowledge that actually is coming there, there has to be an acknowledgement. This was the kindness bestowed by the spiritual master to allow me to understand this. So one is grateful for the knowledge. So the competitive thing is replaced by gratitude. If it's so that is the purification. It's changing a mindset. Then let's say one is in a regular material situation and one is eating something. So let's say one's vegetarian. So one takes a vegetarian meal and feels righteous. You know, I have now, you know, done my part in this world for, you know, making sure that the animals are unharmed. Inevitably, there's some feeling of righteousness. And then, on the other hand, say one is taking prasadam, and again, one is understanding this vegetarian meal is actually being offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It was actually prepared lovingly by someone. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has tasted this, and it's my good fortune that somehow or other I've had this connection with that extraordinary transcendental personality, and now I'm getting a chance to actually taste this beautiful meal. So immediately there's a sense of appreciation, a sense of wanting to extol the virtues of somebody who prepared something so beautiful, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead for his somehow being able to make this taste quite different to what a regular vegetarian meal would taste like. It's got a special taste, flavor. It's that blissful component. So one is again purified, you've treated the disease of somehow maybe righteousness, pride, to by feeling gratitude, feeling appreciation, remembering a relationship with the transcendent personality who is somehow connecting one with one on this material plane. So the consciousness is uplifted. So, and the disease is being treated. And I can't remember what was the third example you brought up. I remember the prasadam and the reading of scripture being purified. And I can't remember what the third one was.
Some sort of injury or stubbing your toe, you know.
There may be some difficulty that's experienced on a material level, and then the natural thing is to feel a little depressed or a little unhappy because, you know, one has not been able to move freely in one's quest for controlling everything and making the perfect arrangements and getting the results one was heading for. So, and on the, you know, purifying plane, it's having heard from devotees, having heard from the scriptures that the particular difficulty one runs into is actually kindly being arranged to allow one to drop some of that diseased way of looking at things. So one can then see the external thing that's happening that's uncomfortable or difficult and actually think, okay, this is somehow some blessing. I'm not seeing it right now, but it's a blessing. So let me examine what this can help me to understand. And inevitably, when one looks at, let's say one's run into a physical difficulty as you've described, when one looks at it, one may find that one's incapacitated for some time, and then because one's incapacitated physically for some time, it forces one to actually be more contemplative, more thoughtful, and one may not have taken that time otherwise in one's, you know, material quest. You know, there's no time for, you know, stopping and contemplating. That's not part of that picture. That picture all has to do with achieving. So, you know, with contemplating and reflecting, one again gets a chance to remember one's relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in that way, again, you're breaking something of the mindset that was there, something of that. I mean, Srila Prabhupada uses the word fruitive all the time because, you know, you're wanting some result. So, yeah, so that's, purification is like treatment. It's a treatment for a very uncomfortable condition that produces a lot of unhappiness. Whereas the other, that once one applies the treatment, there's that experience of spiritual bliss because one's connecting with the great personality who's the source of that. So, yeah, so it's a happy, purifying, happy treatment. It's all done in a happy mood. And one can take a deep breath and drop all that regular mindset that unfortunately we settled with. And sometimes we can consciously give it a kick in the face. So, yeah, it's a response. Thank you for the question. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.